you mentioned that there's someone you located in Los Angeles that actually turned Dave Worster against you.
Oh, that's my old friend Paul Seibel. You see, when we went out to Seattle in September 25th, 69, Carol and I decided to get to know Dave Worster. I'd met him earlier. You can see the earlier encounters in the diaries.
Yes.
I decided to go see what is this cosmic awareness. And we've been using the D-cell for 3 or 4 months or something. You know what I mean? So we were digging the D-cell. So when something's good, we go for it. We don't sit around and wonder. We go meet the people. We get involved. So we went out there and met Dave. And there was a movement starting around him about a month before, because they had the September 5th, 69, they had the Apex of Polarity reunion of a lot of people that were involved with Doobie in the early 60s, and then around the retrieval of Dave after Doobie had died in January 22nd. So here are these people, 67, 68, gathering around Dave, and there were a couple of baby boomer people that they were like early 20s. And when we showed up, we were going to find a place to stay, but it turned out these younger kids had a big house on Eastern Avenue, so this is the west going east, and in Seattle near the University District. So they invited Carol and I to stay with them. And because we looked young, they thought we were like their age. We certainly didn't tell them who we were or anything. That was all secret. So, and we were still working with the Secret Council 10. So this is part of what I would do in Secret Council 10 anyways when I was an underling, is go find avant-garde, leading-edge little operations and see what it meant. So we moved in with Jim Hewitt and Sharon Parker, Paul Seibel, Alan Walker. Maybe that's about it. Jim and Sharon and Paul and Alan Walker, maybe Walker, definitely Paul, Jim, and Sharon were taking development classes. They'd been hanging out with Dave Worster for 6 months or more. And Dave had gone to jail just before I got there, or around the time we got there. But he was only in jail for a week or something for a marijuana bust or something. So you have Jim Hewitt and Sharon. They met in the group and became a pair in one room. Paul Seibel is in another room, and then me and Carol were in another room. Alan Walker showed up sometime in there, around the same time as us, and he lived in the room with Paul. So you had six people in this nice big house in Seattle. We'd never been to Seattle before, other than passing through a couple times. And it's a rainy thing, so it was sort of like Nova Scotia weather. So we started the development classes, and Paul Seibel was older than Jim and Sharon. He had gone to Vietnam, and I think he was a cook in Vietnam or something. I don't think he had to see much battles, but I think he was quite shaken up by it, and he and Jim and Sharon were taking really good LSD that Dave Worster had. So here's Carol and Bob show up, and we probably look like we're on speed, or I did. That's what people complained about back then. And I'm an intellectual, interested in Dave's intellectual stuff. And I wasn't into doing the rituals and the development classes, but being a spy, I had to do it, right? I had to join it and go through this once a month or something every Saturday night. No, we did 12 classes, so maybe we did it for every other week or something, starting in October, September, October, 2 weeks. You get twice in October, twice. Yeah, you could just twice a month every 2 weeks. And as the winter unfolded and get into January, Seibel started to get a bit irritated by me. I wasn't being the obedient person or something. I had no visible means of support. I didn't have to work like they did. Jim was the leader, and maybe I knew stuff that he didn't know, like Finnegan's Wake and stuff like that threatened his authority on the secular mortar world. But I wasn't aggressive. They thought we were supposed to be part of a movement. So things started to get suspicious of me. And Alan Walker, in the middle of these, you know, this esoteric, occult, interesting early version of ION, interpretation of the Bible, concepts about the Book of Revelation, Alan Walker suddenly flips out and goes fundamentalist Christian on us. He starts reading the Bible, and he's a fundamentalist guy. Now, he was a physicist, a mathematician. I would say he was a nerd. To me, he was an early nerd, a guy who had studied physics and was excellent in physics in college, graduated, but didn't know what to fucking do with himself once he got out of school. He didn't have homework to do anymore, math homework. So he was adrift, and something brought him to Seattle. I can't remember how he ended up there. And so he gravitated towards me and Carolyn because we were more detached about it than Paul and Jim and Sharon, right? So around the 10th development class, there were 12, and the 10th one, I said, I don't think I'm going to complete the course. That means I become a minister of awareness. I don't want to be a fucking occult member. I am not attending to this week's thing. And Carolyn agreed, and Alan Walker joined us. So Alan, me, and Carolyn drove around the city that Saturday night and just went out and did whatever little party thing you could do on our own while waiting for the session to be over, because it was done, always done in Eastern Avenue. So it certainly was registered that we had dropped out. But we still were there and still hanging out. But eventually Dave came over in February. We were all getting ready to go to L.A. in March to see Krishnamurti speak. I'd seen him before, but it was fun going in the context with these with Dave Worster as a fan of Krishnamurti. So we were all going to go down to L.A., and we all had to get there on our own. So I think Seibel, he drove down. He had a car, so he drove Worster down. Al Walker didn't go, so Carol and I had to go down on our own. And also, there were rumors that we were maybe going to leave and go somewhere else, go to L.A. or somewhere. We weren't going to stay in Seattle because we weren't going to hang around for the development classes. And in the middle of there, somewhere, Dave Worster came over, and he was mad about something, and he started sort of criticizing everybody there. But he then turned to me, and he said, "You will never forget my face." So he made this sort of aggressive accusation that he knew I was leaving. So he said I would never forget his face. So that was a bit alienating for a while from Dave. But it was so many people around, you could sort of still mingle and not have to deal with it. And then we went down to L.A. And so that's where I met Jodan Sloan. And and saw Krishnamurti and went up and saw Frank Zappa. And met some other people that were part of the L.A. world. And that is what's described in the Pynchon book, Inherent
Bleeding
Vice.
Edge.
I think that's what it's called. Inherent Vice, not Bleeding Edge. Inherent Vice is about the spring 1970. This is when it's all happening down there. And we're there. This is post-Manson. And Manson had had a record label called the Awareness Label. So Dave Worster was the first person I ever met who would see himself reflected in the media. The Xenocrity thing, you know?
Okay.
So he'd make he was like the android being would imitate him. He's running Cosmic Awareness, so the big psychopath, Manson, makes a record label called Awareness. And Worster was the only guy with the word awareness around in his group organization. So so we had a great time in L.A., and everybody was happy. So we went back, and Carol and I decided to go back down to L.A., see what happens down there. So we did that for a few months, and that's what's registered in the novel. And then we went back to Toronto and Montreal, eventually working our way back to Halifax, because Carolyn started thinking that she was maybe going to go to university. This is where she's starting to get out of the Secret Council 10, try to develop a cover. Now, she learned a lot of alternative stuff in Joe's library that week. So a year later, we went back and stayed with Jodan Sloan before we went up to Seattle. And that's after being in New York. And we also visited Houston, where Al Walker had left the Cosmic Awareness Group, too, and he went back to Houston. His father was an employee in NASA. So we went and visited Al Walker and his younger son, brother Jesse, and met his, NASA parents, and they drove us to Mexico when we stayed there a few days, but we wanted to go down to Mexico for a while on the way to California, and Al and Jesse drove us. And went through the desert. Jesse went running out in the desert to get some peyote or something. He knew how to find it. So that was neat. And then we go and visit Zappa again. And in Houston, we went to Dallas. Let me see. We went to Austin before we went to Houston because a guy had come up and met the group, I don't know, January, February, John somebody. He was from Austin. And he liked me, so we became sort of acquaintance. So he asked us to drop into Austin. So we dropped into Austin, and that's where I had that interesting experience of Firesun Theater, which Reverend Stang was learning as a first-year student in college at the same time. And so we stayed there for a couple weeks, had some interesting experiences there, and then went to Houston, then Mexico. Oh, yeah, so when I was in Austin, that's when Bertie Ketchings gave me that private session, saying that I was a spiritual gift to the masses and that I would be involved with Frank and Gail. Okay? You get that?
Yeah,
I've told that before. So meanwhile, we go over to California, hang out with Joe Dunn Sloan. Carol learns more about alternative medicine in his library. We learn more about the D-cell. We go to Hawaii for a few days. Then we go up to Seattle. Oh, we went up to up to San Francisco in there, too, Palo Alto, and that's when I went up and saw Beefheart at Ben Lomond. That was mentioned, Allison mentioned a few hours ago. You'll hear that. Beefheart was staying in Ben Lomond. And Bruce Lipton lived in Ben Lomond, she said, Allison said. So meanwhile, when we were with Joe Dunn Sloan, Paul Seibel had kind of split a bit from Dave Worster and was hanging out with Joe Dunn Sloan, and he learned how to make the D-cell or help to bring it forth. Then Dave came down and helped with that. And Dave always said that he and Joe discovered the S-cell. And Paul might have been part of that too. So Paul is drifting around different places, not really happy just staying in Seattle. And that went on for years. Paul, and we would always see Paul, he was sort of a friend. But Paul, I don't think Paul liked me in some ways. Like, Paul was to me a working class guy. He had to work. He always worked. And he's worked all his life, all these years as a carpenter. He set up his own carpenter thing, always building and working. And he would come home every day at Eastern Avenue, and I'd be sitting there, I'd been listening to music, reading, masturbating, the usual shit. And, it was alien to him, someone living like that. So Paul never totally liked me, I don't think, or he didn't trust me. And he's probably right on that level. So through the years, we always saw Dave Worster and usually saw Paul. We went to L.A. when Dave Worster moved there in 75 or so. And Paul and him moved in together. Then they would split. Then they'd be together back and forth. And Vern Christensen, Dave's lover, was always in the mix, too. So from 76 to 94, Dave's in L.A., and we would visit him all the time. Now we jump to Ion shows up many years later, and Dave's hearing about it, has some good conversations with J.W., interacts with Ion on the May 19th, the last payday. Dave Worster comes in like the 9th or 10th hour and talks to Ion, doesn't fully know who or what he's talking to. And then later, when Dave gets alienated about what we're doing somehow, I find out it's Paul is saying crazy things to Dave. He's saying Bob is using this Ion for personal reasons. Carolyn's not. This is what I heard from Dave Worster. He said that Paul told him that Carolyn is not interested in Ion. Bob's an embarrassment for Carolyn, and Carolyn just doesn't get involved in anything that Bob does. So Paul had this whole crazy idea that I was doing this Ion, and Carolyn was just barely putting up with it. You know what I mean? And so I found that out 2 years ago, March 2013, and I realized that Dave was being misinformed by Paul, maybe because Dave wanted to be critical of he wasn't in charge of this, so he didn't understand why we were engaging with somebody else. So Dave needed someone to make up stories about how bad we were or how off we were. So that's Paul Seibel. And so Paul, I partly blame for influencing Dave, a negative interpretation of what's going on with Eindem, because I heard a couple of remarks, Dave said, Paul laughs at Bob because Bob makes a big deal out of Rai. Paul laughs at Bob because they claim they've got these RNA drops that are doing this crazy stuff. He's just not taking it in, believing it. So it's interesting that a couple of weeks ago, out of the blue, Ion mentions Paul Seibel. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Yeah. And so basically Paul is just an acquaintance since 1969, 40-plus years, sort of a friend. I mean, one time when we visited L.A., maybe 2008, when were we there? 2008. Yeah, when we were there in 2008, that's a year before Ion, on our way to Maui, Paul arranged for us to have a dinner with he and his friends. So that was an apparent friendship level, right? You know, we were the guest of honor, me and Carolyn, at his friend's party. And that was the last time I've been with Paul. So that's 7 years ago. Yeah, 7 years ago. So there it is for the record. Paul Seibel, member of Cosmic Awareness, been you know, a great friend of Dave Wurster, knows Dave Wurster very well, knows the history of a lot of stuff in the awareness world. But he went on to be a successful carpenter in L.A., you know, fixing up stars, houses, and things like that. He's probably got a lot of stories of people he met. He actually got into theater and did some acting we saw back in the 80s, maybe. He was acting locally in local theater. All right, so that's Paul Seibel. He may be, he's a factor in Dave's alienation from Ion.
Also, in your the Relax clip, you and Ion discussed Dave Wurster about him not really continue to follow his cosmic awareness. So that's
That's in Relax and Allow.
Yeah, in the Relax, not the Allow, but the Relax tape, you discuss Dave Wurster.
So we
and Ion makes it.
I can't see where that would be a private matter. Why would that be in a public tape that we sell?
Well, it was just about that Ion just made the comment that if he was actually cosmically aware, he would never left it alone.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And does he mention Michael Blake Reed also?
No. No, just Dave.
Okay, he says that Dave, if it was real stuff, Dave wouldn't have stopped it.
Yes. He would have stayed cosmically aware.
That's an interesting... stayed cosmically aware, did you say?
Yes, he would have stayed cosmically aware. So it wasn't really directly stated, it was implied that he wasn't continuing to be cosmically aware.
Yeah, that was one of the early unique things about Ion, or JW, was the first medium I ever met who said, once you do this, you would never stop. And you always have stories of mediums going in and out, frustrated by it, dropping it, then picking it up again, like quite erratic with their mediumship and health problems, all this. I think that JW is the first, quote, medium, even though that's not really what's going on, but in the beginning it seemed to be that that's what he's doing, that said, I would never stop doing this. This is part of my life. You know, I want to experience the constant orgasm I get from the altered state. You know, that was different. And then to criticize anybody, well, they stopped, like Michael Blake Reed stopped. Well, what the fuck's wrong with him? What, they can't be doing the real stuff. You would never stop this. Never heard anybody say that ever before.
Yes. That's what made it interesting in that tape when you were discussing.
Yeah,
that he it appeared that he stopped, which he actually did. If you look at it, he should have continued. I mean, I enjoyed his interactions with Ion when they were talking, and that's what kind of surprised me when you said that he's no longer, you know, he was talking negative, but you just explained it about that influence, the guy. So that made it interesting for me, just to close that loop, Dave Wurster.
Right, and Dave would say that he didn't stop. He moved into conscious mediumship, that he didn't require to serve people that way anymore. So Dave would have an argument, I think, about that. He'd have a defense that he didn't quit. He evolved out of it. Because I talked about it many times with Dave. That's what he would say.
Yeah.
And you probably hear it in the recordings, the 24-hour session with him.